Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about our response to mosaic art produced by a friend called Lisa from the United States. We'll leave it at that. And I'm just going to go through a series of things. This is some highfalutin ideas. Unfortunately, it's a podcast. You can fast forward them. This is art and science, and then my sort of aspect of art and science. Then we'll get into a bit of a description of the mosaics, and then we'll go through and try and unpack a little bit of the science of a response, and then again a science response of, you know, where it could go after this. So that's the sequence we're going through. And then, but before we start on that, I'll sort of give a bit of a background, why a podcast and why this structure and why I've decided to do a podcast and all that type of stuff. So not all the story of a response is to do with the object you're responding to. Some of it's to do with the person responding. And I've had to get the skill of podcasting up, part of having some sort of, I suppose, brain damage, trauma, whatever you call it. A very diffuse brain damage. And so that's meant that I've had to really struggle. So this is up around 2,500 podcasts that I've done, and slowly learnt to produce them. And of course, although I do care about an audience, it's more the thought that you do have an audience that you bother actually doing it. So it's a bit hard to actually prepare a speech and give it to a tree. It's much better to give it to a microphone and think, oh, look, it's going somewhere. Now, how did I get on that? Part of, it's hard to describe why you're doing something from the brain damage straight. So, you know, it's a bit fussy and you're looking at your options, and it's part of your brain's functioning, and it's got to work out the best thing to do. And so the best thing to do was to check, you know, basically systems check. Can I still program? Can I still think strategically? Can I still speak? And the answer was no, not really, not as good as before. Oh, no, you need a lot of work on that. That's stuff like that. Then came along the situation where the doctor said, oh, geez, your employer is really not looking after you. Yeah, they should be, and they listed a series of things, and they're not doing it. And of course, that sort of bypassed my front desk of, you know, response into the back head, oh, you have to do this, this, and this, and achieve it. So I began doing a series of things, more serious podcasting and understanding of walking while podcasting. Of course, that produces a pretty crappy podcast all up. Just the processes of the two things, and they're focusing on thinking of a complete podcast first in your head. Get it all stacked up in your head first, and then get it come out. And of course, you have to memorize stuff to try and get the memory up. And then if it puts you in a spot where your memory fails, you have to speak and squirt around it like you do in a social situation to try and go through it. So I've been going, sometimes I've had some good podcasts, things that people have been really interested in. The Chinese have been interested in one particular podcast where I said basically the way Chinese do things is, well, they interpreted it as that. I think it was Aristotle saying this particular philosopher was, you shouldn't laugh at him, he's pretty good because he made a heap of money. And of course, there's a lot out there in philosophy, and why you pick one tiny aspect of it to go forward to fit your means. Well, I think a lot of people do that. They spend their entire life having a set of conclusions that they've thought of, and they go around fitting, searching for data which supports it. And of course, lots of people have experienced it. When you're the piece of data that they don't, it doesn't support their hypothesis, you get this unusual exclusion. This, what's the reason for it? And you go back that they're searching for it. So there's a bit of an insight from doing the podcast. And so this is, in general, another thing I've had to do is sort of always mix things. So back before the COVID, I used to be in the gym with a converted the gym console what you're walking on. You know how modern gym equipment, it's rather amusing to see treadmills from 10 years ago in the various movies. Various people are on the treadmill is a place to be, you know, and it says so much about a person. You photograph them on the treadmill, it's, you know, they usually get murdered on it. But in general, there's only a tiny little LCD screen, but now there's a big computer screen, and I can surf the internet and then log into brain training. And this is hours and hours of brain training, pushing and grinding away. Is there any limit? Well, there's no one. I'm sort of aiming for a finishing line, which is sort of always vanishing over the horizon, and there's no evidence of any grandstand, anyone there applauding. There's sort of no evidence of a consensus feel, which sort of brings me into the discussion, turning over from that last bit, which is describing where I'm coming from, to the next bit. But I'll just back up a little bit. One of the things is they said, oh, look, you have to work on your social stuff. And so social stuff was, oh, okay, well, I'll really focus on it and I will listen properly and put my antenna out. And so various things. I haven't done very well on social stuff, but I have built a support organisation around me called the Glenbrook Advanced Concept Institute with directors and members, and we talk institute business, which is sort of like talking, but basically it's institute business, but it's code for just talk to me normally as I would normally, but it at a higher level. So I think you perhaps would understand that sort of the average person at the fruit shop and stuff like that, or organisations, and talking to them, and they've sort of spent their entire life in suburbia and sort of picking up groceries and digging and potting mix and, you know, having grandchildren come around and all that type of stuff. You're suddenly speaking at the higher level is sort of burns them out. So this Glenbrook Advanced Concept Institute, which is sort of punches way, way above its weight by definition, is a system there. And then also consideration, thinking, you know, what people say. So that's all part of the package to quietly move forward. And it's not so everything's artificial. It is actual genuine me in the institute and genuine me stretching out. We're going to the idea of consensus. And so a lot of human interaction is consensus. It's custom. If you do the wrong thing, if you don't follow the right custom, and people get really upset, and a lot of artists do the custom, and science is probably against custom, so we're all supposed to do this is what we think of the conversation. So this is consensus. So we have a lot of consensus thinking that is something so because everyone says it, and it's a very I've only arrived at this by actually deep education, and there's sort of some really basic things sort of discussed in general about electrons, protons, and neutrons. Everyone's taught it, and they're taught it, but they're not taught the really aspects of it. An electron, you have to rotate it twice. A physical thing, which you have to rotate twice. A fully on dinky die live group with infinite rotation. That is, it's so small we can't put a mark on it to see that it's rotating. So it actually doesn't. It's not like a model, but you can put a mark on it and trick and have the sort of the trick it's rotating. But so you can see it's the same. It really is the same. So there's a whole group of complexity. Now, the consensus theory, the overall consensus of education. That's not true, right? And why it's not true is because we've formed a consensus that we prefer it not to be true because it's simpler to teach. And so you've got everyone tumbling off in that position, and then you've got the scientists going, hang on, I can speak to you, but this is wave functions, ghosts, unusual stuff happening. And we've got a whole group of people who said that we've decided, we've come to consensus that quantum mechanics is a true. Essentially, so you have to sort of bite your lip and say, oh, I don't want to bash it up. Some study to do here and churn through. So let's get back to art. Art essentially is a response, a cultural, psychological response to the outside world. And you've got I'll discuss about your things, but you've also got art in terms of the way people dress. Basically how they see, how they approach everything, and a lot of it is to do with consensus, it's in fashion, and a lot of art's sort of secondary art, so we have people seeing themselves, and they see them seeing themselves, top consensus, so a scientist is going to really have some difficulty responding and going into it. Now, there's some other artists. Some of the things that struck me from my time in the army. I spent 15 years, and there's some artistic aspects to it. It's like the way you put camouflage, the way that you decorate your uniform with camouflage. A bit unlike the movies or the footage. You'd always camouflage your uniform, put heaps of camouflage on and twigs and things to break out the outline of everything. So the thing is, you don't see it. Again, in the military on TV is an artistic interpretation of the actual thing. And there were certain sometimes artistic things of actually just digging a latrine out there, or the positioning of your things. And sometimes you could put a machine gun pit at a junction. Suicidal, thousands of things. But it would be an artistic expression of militariness, and then you see the generals dress up in their uniform. Now, of course, the artistic stuff is the Napoleonic thing, where probably where they dressed up in the most ridiculous, these beautiful gold braided uniforms with epaulets and symbols of power. And if you look at Donald Trump, the people standing behind the beautiful artistic American flags with the orange tassel around the outside. I don't know if you've seen that, the orange tassel. And the material draped in such a way, it's sort of ironed, but it's obviously stitched. It's obviously material, and it's sort of ceremonially out for the generals there, and the big artistic set of these colours, these mosaic colours on themselves, and of course, essentially what essentially does that mean, campaign and stuff, and when you go through it, ostensibly, I've got a few medals for 6 years service, and they go up there as much as any other medal. So a lot of them are fully campaign medals, but a lot of them are you're still doing your job medal for a while. So there's a lot of artistic stuff in that, in the way you communicate, and it's sort of a consensus. Now, of course, as a scientist, a consensus equals word bias, and there's a whole quality control in science to move away from consensus. And essentially, you are aiming for to be the first person to pick up a test tube and say, good God, everyone, good old 7 billion people, 7 billion consensus is not good enough. They're all wrong. Now, there's that process of TNAP, they're all wrong process, all the way out. And I probably have had that experience. It's not experience, it's a few times where in the lab, where you see something and you go, oh my God, consensus is off. And we have this process of checking it and saying, well, we have to change the consensus. Now, what's happened is that science has moved away from that. Now, in terms of art appreciation, if I can bring these two things in, and just, if you can remember at the top of this, I'm planning cognitive rehab to think thoughts over a couple of hours before, incubate them, put them all together. That's sort of got the military stuff. And I was particularly in France, in Versailles, Napoleon's tombs, the Napoleon uniforms in these Versailles museums, and the doing Kew Wargaming Club. And the Kew Wargaming Club, I should talk about. I was in a wargaming club, and what would happen, and I think you would understand this type of stuff. I read the rules, memorised the rules, knew the rules better than anybody else just by reading it. It's nothing special, you know, to piss people off. And then I began beating people. Simply because they just couldn't. And it's not like that now. So I can scrabble. I get 60 and everyone else gets 110. Or in chess, my son can beat me now. So, but back then, it was different. So what they can do is that they can even things up, give you less and less forces than the other person, more and more forces. And unfortunately, people with more and more forces have more to control and more parameters to do. If you've got less and less forces, you've got more to go. They gave me a Prussian army. And of course, my armies, which I painted up, used to love painting, and you get into the theory of it. My Prussian army began beating all the other armies, and then people said, bloody hell, we hate the Prussian army, and stuff like that. And there was a little bit of a story there, and that sort of goes into it. So it's, to me, sort of always gave me the impression of how other people interpret things. Like that they will interpret anything but that you are good at anything. It's your army, the colour of the army, and this. And now we've given you a little small force, you've learned how to use a small force really effectively or something like that. But it meant that I was really into the uniforms and the thoughts, and the shakos and the processes here, and it's really probably the first time I had to research someone. Say, look, we've only got enough lead soldiers here to do the Italian campaign. The Poles first said they needed something, so I went into the state library. It was pretty great because you go up to the old card indexes, you go up to the card indexes, you write it out in a pencil, and the people would go off, and you'd go up to the desk, and a runner would go up and get you the book, and it would be very difficult to actually, you'd probably get three or four paragraphs of it. And it was really good because it meant that it took a long time to get some information, you only got fragments of incoherent information. Yeah, it was really good. Good research training, but sort of getting back into it, there was the paintings in the Louvre of Edward Dutard. And so these sort of 1880s French look. It was somewhere just a little bit before those big Soviet paintings of the heroic person with huge muscles and the woman with that scarf over her head. looking seriously to the Hamlin sequel, reaching out, and all the big Soviet tank, the huge barrel coming out of it. It was just on the verge of going to post-RAR, but it wasn't quite. It was really post-RAR, come Roman, romantic, which is the high realism painting. And you sort of looked at it, and it was great, until someone pointed out to me that it was, and there indeed, it was absolute crap. And then, years later, in the New South Wales Museum, going around, there was a huge, very ultra-famous Edward D. Tile. Edward D. Tile, his consensus is it's crap, but I had this unique relationship with it, and it began to be very... It was missing something. It was post-RAR. Walking through there, I came up to another picture. And this story will relate to the first analysis of here. It was the picture of cows grazing. And I wish I could remember the person. He's a German painter. And he painted these cows in the morning in Penrith, which is close to where we are. And the great thing about the cows is that the sun was behind them, and the light around the ears was a little white line, sometimes when light hits a surface. And I thought, that's it. It's not diffraction, but it's got it. You know, when the light hits a fuzzy surface, glows around the outside, and so that was what's missing. And then a little bit later, I found a book in a hotel, not a hotel, a Airbnb or something like that, about this guy, I can't remember, and he was, you know, a Canberra artist, I think. Well, no, it's an exhibition of him, but the guy only ever painted cows. Is rather funny. So, which is interesting in that he had his direction, and that direction was not was odd, but it meant that it focused, and he got the lighting correct, and that was very interesting. And what happens, I suppose I should say at this stage, that occasionally I will go and be at an art exhibition, small art exhibition, and people see me looking and talk, begin chatting to me. And there was, in the Botanic Gardens, there was an art exhibition of this person, and they said, "Oh, well, what do you like about the work?" And I said, "Oh, it's ink. It's got sometimes very sharp outlines, but then sometimes it uses the feathering effect of the fibres in the wash and stuff like that." And we had a good old conversation, and they said, "Oh no, Dad, I will save you from him. He never sees what the consensus is. He's off on these really small tangents." And so that's a bit of a spoiler alert. I'm going to go on some small tangents. But getting back to the scattering effect, and let's go back to the lab. I had a slide of cadmium sulfide. Oh, so what happened? Let's go. It's the research became too hectic to look after the family. Decided to go teaching. Went to the teaching. They said, "We do not understand." Well, they spent a good fraction of $1 million recruiting PhD people, and then there was 40 of us PhDs up in, you know, Sydney. And then they gave their lecture. The next time we turned up, it was only two of us, and everyone else went, "For fuck's sake, we're leaving." Of course, the two of us, I had a very sick family, the other person that was just at the end of the road, we had to do it anyway. And so everyone else thing. And then they got us in, and they said, "Well, the thing is, we don't understand what a PhD is, a science degree is. So we want you to do a second science degree." I know that sounds stupid, but it is true. It is true. And we sort of said, "Oh, look, if you don't if we don't do that, how can we just do the teaching degree? And they said, you can, but then you'll have to pay for the teaching degree. So this was a scholarship, so they would pay you to do. And I thought, I'll do a second science degree. That'll be fun. Let's see how science has changed. And the story, the shock horror, is that they taught me out-of-date crap in my BSc. And some, 20 years later, 15 years... 20 years later... It hadn't changed. I went far out. And a lot of the techniques came up. And there was one case where so-and-so said, it's like this. And it was a electron, photoelectron spectrometer. And they said, it's like that. And I was there. It'll be like this. It'll be the sum of these two things. And I said, and I had written the paper on it, written a significant research paper on it. And the person that they had read about to do it, they were now instructing. This is how crazy the place was. But I had some cadmium sulfide, and I put it on a slide, and I was measuring the band gap. Now, unknown to these people, that I had been measuring optical fibre band gaps in filters, Bragg gratings. So I knew a lot about it. And I put it across, and just standard procedure. I scanned all the way through twice and saw this oscillation up and down. It was a rainbow effect. And a rainbow effect on it. And I thought, wow. And then I looked it up, sort of similar to the Napoleonic War thing, looked it up. There's something called my scattering. And of course, now my kids go, Dad, hey, look over here, look at this milk. And I know a little bit. But what had happened is that then there was bushfires all around us, and I was in the pool. It was before the Jesus Christ, get out of the place. So it's sort of changed in Australia now. So it's catastrophic. You have to get out of the place. And then I looked up, and on the cloud, I suddenly saw this rainbow cloud. And I don't know whether I can see it in the moment. It's not the right time of the year. And it was this rainbow scattering in a cloud. And you can, if you want to look it up on the internet, is this rainbow light scattering. And there's this maths called my scattering. And you see it everywhere. And I sometimes see it when I'm told off. Don't put the lid on the hot food yet, but I do. And when I do, it goes a little rainbow, a little short time. So I see little bits of my scattering about the place, and I really, really enjoy it. And of course, going back to this person painting the cow, he got the my scattering of the cow right. He got some fur right because he was able to paint what he felt, what he saw, and everyone sees that. Now, the interesting thing is that I go around, and I have my own little private light show. Private in that I can see it, but I point out to other people, they see it for a short while, yes. Now, the rainbows are not the rainbow of your rainbow, somewhere over the rainbow, is that... Dorothy, Wizard of Oz rainbow. They're not that rainbow. The rainbow are all secondary colours. So you've got your primary colour, radio, rainbow. These are all secondary colours because there's always a mixture of two things. So you get these mauves and greens and very subtle. And it's as equally beautiful and stuff like that. And you've got to know where to look at it. It's in a general milkiness it's sort of in it's in the same sort of maths for why the sky is blue and opalescence. Now, the interesting thing is that the entire gamut of science is because we've got science education as consensus education, which is the consensus bubble where people teach it. They can't teach the students why the sky is blue. All these factions happening. In fact, they're training these students to only have a very narrow look. I'll probably have a good strategic think of how to actually solve that. So there's that opalescence and the colour, and I will point it out to a few people. I say, "What are you looking at, mate?" And I'll say, "I'm looking up at those rainbow clouds." "Oh, gee, they're rainbow clouds." And then they'll come back and say, "Oh, I've saw it once. I never saw it again." And sometimes when they're speaking to you, there'll be a huge rainbow cloud behind them. So I'll see if I can point it out. If you go on the internet, that you look at rainbow clouds. So now we come back to the colour and art. And another example of my scattering is in skin and in people. We are, light enters our skin, goes in a depth, again comes out an angle. And in fact, if you shine a laser at someone's skin, the entire skin will go in this big glow, and it will glow back. And in essence, we are cloud people, the thickness of it. And so when you're looking at the masters, yes, they can slap on. You know, you look at Rembrandt and stuff like that, can really slap on and get the sort of the deep, hard, dead thickness. Like say you look at a tree, they can do a tree, but it doesn't have the lifelikeness of it like that. And it's also interesting to see the art go from scientific diagrams to emojis to flattened emojis, all this type of stuff. I talk about this at the moment because I'm giving my time, consultation time, to a few volunteer websites, and it's just this really calm, "Oh, right," it's sort of moving away from this consensus thought and sort of analysis. What is the NIST standard for this? What is the scientific standard for displaying that? What would that mean to do it? And all these things. And you've got emojis and the way that the lines go on the outside. So now we've done that, my sort of journey. And the reason that I'm doing this is to store information in my head and to be able to speak it out afterwards. So let's look at the mosaics, Lisa's mosaics. Now, the first thing that strikes you, it's different from the mosaics that you see, say, brushing aside the baths of a Roman floor or something like that. These are glass, and the glass goes in, the light goes in and bounces around. And again, let's talk a little bit about the science of glass. One of the science of glass that people use is band gaps. And this glass science uses band gaps, colour centres, blah, blah, blah. And essentially, you're looking at it, and it's similar to school science. It's wrong. Glass is not crystal. It can't have a band gap. It does have the features of a band gap, but essentially it's aperiodic and it's not like a diamond, which has got a band gap and you can see through it. Glass is aperiodic. It's basically a liquid, and therefore it's doesn't have repeating molecular orbitals within it. So there's a little bit of a story between it. And so the electrons, which are actually held in an unusual chaotic shape outside. And this is true. And from actually hitting optical fibers with laser beams, this became very, very apparent. This is the hardening of glass. And you can actually change the properties of glass by hitting with electron beams and laser beams and UV beams. And you eject electrons from colour centres, and the electrons move out in particular areas. And the glass has a memory, very much to do with the polarisation of the light. And you can actually write a polarisation field into the glass. So glass is a very interesting medium to go into. So it's not much scattering, but it's this chaos. It's this frozen liquid that you can see into. It's got this death. And it's not opalescence. So it's like if you, I think you can get opalescence in some soap, where pearlescence. It's in. So in, immediately your some of the views inside it has got this colour in. Now, the other really interesting thing with glasses is that it is possible to pick glasses which are completely different, fluorescent glasses, but glasses which have got completely different absorption spectra, spike absorption spectrum. So a slight, subtle change in light can radically change how the glass operates, and things like that. This is a new gem called tanzanite, which goes there. And so glass has all these properties, second order, nonlinear stuff. It's anything but group theory. It has no symmetry because it's chaotic between its stuff. And the colour centres are very interesting. So as you go for the Edward de Tal, very heavy painting, the Dutch masters, this goes in. Now, of course, this, my sort of conversation, has no interest to people who are in the consensus world, because scientists aren't in the consensus world. And it is very interesting to the actual artists themselves, but really nobody else. But there's things we can do with the glass. Now, there's So glass I really like, and there's a sort of tension between different colours of glass, which is quite interesting how that's gone through. So the first email I got was three panels of glass, and these were just, so what do you say, prototype mosaics. They were mosaics in the design, ready to go. And I saw them, and they really fascinated me. I can actually really go into it a little bit. Then I saw the communication glass. This is paver stones on the Instagram, only for a short second, because then Instagram asked me to authenticate me, and I put in something called the Glenbrook Institute authentication. It's enough, shut off. So I only saw a little glimpse, but I saw enough to think about things in the future. So we go back to these three mosaic constructions, and these are from memory. And the important thing, again, going back to cognitive rehab, is to memorize them, analyze them, and produce ahead. Now, if I can say, there's sort of family, employers that haven't got a clue. The doctors know exactly what's going on. And so even if I do quite well in one aspect, they say, oh, yeah, we expect that, but you've got these other problems. Oh, Christ. So it's, I may as well practice and get up memorizing it. So just memorizing the first three, which I had got a bit of time to look at. The first one is, for me, interesting in terms of you start off left ordered, and you go to right in a slightly more chaos theme, and that sort of spoke to me in a number of things in terms of that was just really nice in terms of that order. So you start off with any set of ideas, they're very ordered, and I think this is the problem. No criticism or anything like that, but this is just in general in life. People set up with a set of ideas, a planned set of ideas. Other people have other plans for them. And essentially, in order to take the next step, they have a requirement of you which is a little bit more and a little bit extra. And that little bit extra just perturbs it a little bit. And before very long, even though they don't want to spend a lot of power at the time stopping you, they will eventually stop you by just actually turning up the chaos knob and making it impossible for you to move forward. And so what you do is that you go through and you're looking at these chaotic little shards coming in together, and you have them in reserve, and I can imagine they're on the table, and you put them in, and things scale down, and you focus in, and it actually draws you into focus. The sort of after a long thought is that you've got to pull back and test and test someone and actually evaluate someone, not from the content of what they're saying, but from the content of how much genuine interest there is and how much diversion they have, how much of it that they are programmed to. They want consensus outcome, and they want the consensus outcome. That's what they want. Anything else is a burden. It's an excess that they want to do it. So it is also a burden for saying no. They want to keep you in control. Now, I'll just have to say that if you stop the salt for just a really short time, if you look at that sort of boundary layer of confusion and stuff like that, why want to entrap people is a side question. If you look at human civilization for a long time, humans or proto-humans, people from 2 million years ago, began to sort of cross the boundary from a pack, sort of a troop, to a tribe, and that was the ever so slight movement from troop loyalty to tribal loyalty, and it's controlling your pack. And controlling the pack is that thoughts of the leader beat thoughts of the underling. And so the leader can have a thought that might be very good, and the underling can have a not such good thought, or have a slightly better thought. It's not going to apply. So it's a thought process. That goes for a while, and then at a certain time you learn to play across. And domesticate animals. Domesticate animals, it's fairly easy to do. You put an animal out, you feed it with a horse, you keep on bashing it up, bullying it until it breaks, or a cow, you separate it from its mother. You do something to it to break it down, or over generations you just the dog bites you, just chuck it in the water, and so the dog, and so you domesticate it over a time. The other aspect is, say, if you are doing agriculture, yes, it is a great thing that you plant something and you don't have to hunt and gather it. You know where it is, and you have made sure you've optimised your farm. What's also not unwritten is that you have to domesticate your humans, i.e. slaves, to harvest them. So as you have a cow, and you feed it, and you milk it, and eventually kill it, you have other humans which you subjugate, and they go out and crop. Now, of course, things have changed a bit. We've now got combine harvesters and stuff like that, and I think people haven't really really kept up with that. But part of the sophistication, I think, is this mind control, bullying, addiction to things. So that's, when I saw that, well, honestly, it's the set of thoughts that I had. Now, you can well say that I have those thoughts in my head, and that those, triggered that error there already. And so it's not necessarily there, but maybe it's deep down there's sort of like the this set of four decisions which led to that. It's a common story, or maybe it's not. It's to go across, but the actual overall, you couldn't say this states that. If you wanted to get in an art exhibition, you'd have to have something extremely obvious. Now, it's quite a little bit aside. I think it was Indonesian art is just beautiful and extreme. That is, they're a bit repressed, and they're fun and colourful, using plastics and stuff like that. And people are so not listening to their message. The message is so developed. So this is a more subtle message here. So this is the bordering in chaos. People are kept in chaos, and there's a whole series of using chaos as a terror mechanism. So one of the interesting things is that if you have a good manager and a bad manager, you get rid of the bad manager. If you have a really bad manager whose next move is going to terrorize the organization, that bad manager can get rid of the good managers, and you're left with that bad manager. So it's always a he, isn't it? He will not heed a warning. He will tell you the wrong advice, and you will know it's the wrong advice, but you go around and everyone's following the sense. That's the major thing. The sense, the centre of attention, and being able to do things wrong. And there's a very interesting studies in evolution which support this idea that it's not necessarily the actual organism, it's the actual solution which evolves. So in nature you can see an animal, and then other animals evolve into the same type, same pattern. Partly mimicry, partly stuff, and they all evolve in the same niche. Because what happens is there's an interaction between the solution and the solution of the solution. So the solution, I have a solution to how to eat, and other animals have a solution to how not to eat. And then that puts a lot of things to all repetitors going very similar. There's examples of just so co-evolution things. I think it's the Tasmanian devil. The Tasmanian devil has, in every ecosystem, there's an animal which is black. I think it's a wolverine, and various things that have gone into that niche. But then other animals can come across, and then they grow into that niche of bad animals, niche of chaos. So one of the things is that chaos is replicated. Go to the other ones. You have the geometric tension of different colours, you know, how you're going to balance the different colours across, and you go across, and whether the pattern is repeated and how it goes across, and that is your general thing. Now, if you ask, I will send you the ultimate tiling, piece of tiling mathematics. It's absolutely beautiful to come across, and again, it's not this consensus stuff. Consensus interface to the human race is a publication. Sometimes if you are knocked out of that, you can still be productive, but you can't necessarily publish. Especially, and you need everything lined up to publish. You need a secure job, you need a mode of publication, you need to have something sufficiently close to what's gone before, such you don't have to do a huge amount of work for it. And you've got to have the mental skills to do it. And so if you've got a little bit of write something out, read it, and then come back a day later and it's full of mistakes, and that type of thing, it's a real challenge. So I'll send that out to you. So it's got that tension of different colours and shades to go through, and it appeals to me mathematically, but that being said, it wouldn't necessarily appeal to everybody else. Other people want to see a cat or a teapot or something twee, that thing that would be something half, into their world, consensus world, but just ever so lightly teases them, perturbations across, which, you don't have to worry. Now, that's sort of the science thing. I'm sorry, it's not too good, but if we can keep on going now, and just to go back, the aim of this is cognitive rehab and be able to talk and articulate. Let's go into some engineering designs. One of the things that you could do is that you want to get the parts separated. You need a separation, so they have to have a separation. And how could you do it? Why don't they do it in tiling, which is bathroom tiling? That's pretty boring. Is they have something called a plastic spacer. Okay, and they sit it on the plastic spacer, put in a bit of grout, knock out the grout, pull out the plastic spacer, and then put in the rest of the grout. So it looks as though it's fantastic. And yeah, you need a plastic spacer for this. However, the plastic spacers for tiles are sort of injection molded pieces of plastic crap. So you need something clever for this. So what you need. Oh, don't listen to me. I'm in Australia at the moment. I've just got a bit of Anzac biscuit crumb on me. Well, my son last night had a Zoom meeting in Scouts, and that everyone had to be in their house and dress up as a Scout. And then they had to cook in front of their computer. Cook these Anzac biscuits. And then, that's there. And I've also been eaten alive by mosquitoes, and it's freezing at the moment. Okay, so I've got these shapes of glass. Now, there's something called a router, a glass router. That is a glass cutting grinding wheel, which sit up, and you can actually edge your glass across. You have to wear eye protection for it, and you can move it across, and you can put a very small groove in it. And I don't know. So it's got, say a millimetre deep, a millimetre deep and half a millimetre across, a groove, and you have a winding wheel, and you push your glass, and you can put a little groove divot around the outside. You can route it around the outside. So there's a... You've got your glass piece, and there's a little route region around the outside. And then into that route, you can put small little half millimetre by 2 millimetre, perhaps, by 3 millimetre pieces of plastic, clear plastic, and you put them around the outside, and then you create a system which holds the pieces in place and holds it at the correct spacing and gets absolutely everything micron perfect. Beautiful. Then you've got these things about... Oh, crap. You've got these things about... I'm just eaten alive. You can put in your grounding compound. I don't know what it is. I would have a tendency to put in... these bits of plastic, they go in there, so you have it down the bottom, so the light have to go in. You may or may not see. I don't know whether it would do it, but the so that's why. Then you put in the filler. I'd put in epoxy glue, and epoxy glue is a dream. And I'm building different bits of robots at the moment, and I have to epoxy things in. Now I had to do it, however. What happens is that I have a table, and within 2 weeks, it has to be cleaned up. And then I don't clean it up in time, it gets put in boxes. And with the brain thing, putting it in boxes, like saying goodbye to it, it's sort of really hard to find it. And the reason I'm building robots and stuff like that is the brain rehab. of, you want to be able to build circuits again and that that type of crap. But that being said, so I use this epoxy, clear epoxy. Now you can get it from your hardware store. In Australia, they have these really unusual things. You buy the actual resin in one place, and you have to walk either a aisle across or right across the other end of these stores. Now, these department stores, these hardware stores, are pretty large. The reason is Australian law means you can't have two chemicals next to each other in a building, which will, if they mix, would combust. And in theory, this, you mix the, if you put enough starter fluid in this epoxy resin, so epoxy, I'll have to remember what the epoxy resin, how the formula goes for it anymore. It goes there, but this is a beautiful thing to pour in, and especially say if you put in, say the first layer was a silicone layer, so that would seal and do it across. Now, why I want to say epoxy resin is that there's another thing which also built for robots. So I'm building robots, and they're being designed to. To teach quantum mechanics, but they also been designed with the aid of primary school students. And part of primary school students, I had one robot with a dancing duck. They wanted the dancing duck to have a dancing floor. And there's this metal, thin metal sheet, costs about $20 each, A4 size, and you can get bigger, I suppose. They're called electro something or other. I have to, if you're interested, send me an email. But these are things, and you can they glow. You put them to a little high voltage transformer, and you can plug it into your car. So if you put 12 volts in, it goes to 2,000, 3,000 volts, and the entire surface of this metal corona discharges. Discharges through a fluorescent material and it glows. Now, of course, what the idea is that you would build your fluorescent, your mosaic tile, and then pot it in epoxy, and then as you're potting it in epoxy, then put a layer of epoxy, put this in with the wires coming out, epoxy's wires coming out, and then you put in a another layer, and then you put your mosaic on top, and then you frame it, but it glows in the dark, or you can glow it. And in terms of kitsch, it's so hard not to be kitsch, but I think it would definitely definitely show there. It's a definite beautiful idea, and these things look, they don't these tiles for $20, whatever it is, they're flat tiles, and you can get blues and greens, all these ethereal colours, but you want a sort of a yellow colour underneath it. Glows across. It's sort of things that you would have as, say, a step tile for people to walk on and at night to sort of really glow. Now, I know that New York's a little bit different from Australia, because you've got all these crazy people. I don't want to say anything about it, but it's sort of like that dreamy thing which it glows. So that's the way I would take it. What I wanted to say is, because it's just a metal sheet with fluorescent material on top of it, it's not like a light bulb or an LED where you've got migration of materials. Due to, it's cold. It's cold. It's got this would glow in, would have a lifetime of millions of years. So it's not like a, it's not like something which can blow. It's sort of like, oh, I don't know, It's not like a normal piece of electrical equipment. The transformer will blow eventually, but, and you can replace the transformer. So the transformer is this little matchbox size thing, and it's epoxy filled, so that's weatherproof. So the bottom line is that if you build something like this, you could build something really robust, which wouldn't go in the garden, glows. So that's my view. Now, what I'm going to say, let's pull back. There's the consensus view of art, and a lot of art commentary is sort of second generation consensus. It is people, the art commentary is about the consensus that other people find doing their consensus of the view, and art is an impression of reality. So it's really deep inside, securely inside the camp, where scientists are on the peripheral. They go out into nature and study these things. And as part of you studying the things, you have a different response. You still have the same. You walk back out from the wilds, walk in and see this artwork, and you say, and it doesn't correspond to the consensus of everything. So you've heard the overall consensus, the descent into chaos and the meaning of control and people's emotional structure, then the tension of finding the right materials, the idea of a medium which the light enters into and you can see through, light can pass through. You've got all those different aspects of it. And then finally, being from a science outfit, you're welcome to ignore me because I'm not consensus, and it's a perfectly valid thing to say that if art is a consensus thing, my comments are not artistic comments, but they are science comments, where you could take it the next time. These are practical techniques that you could add to making mosaics, and that is the using of routing to put in plastic spaces to make it a more a higher speed, more mechanical process, industrialize it. Unfortunately, it's still doing the art in them. Using resin to bind it, and then resin to construct a glowing tablet, a tablet up there. And would you do it? I don't know. My world is a muck of suggestions, and some things I can get up, like sending presents to people. Other things just take that much more. So I'll finish this now and hope that it leaves you in good spirits. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.